We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 386 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining me this week, back for his second appearance, but certainly not his last appearance on the show, Nate Dotson. How are you today, Nate?
Couldn't be a whole lot better. I don't know that I'm qualified to be on the world's most dangerous podcast, but I'm going to do my best.
Oh, it's 25% more dangerous with you on here.
So I'll watch my language.
Please do. Yes, please do. It's a family show. I am back, obviously, after a couple of weeks off. I want to thank the hosts that held the shop together while I was gone. Didn't burn the place down. Didn't burn Red Leg Nation Radio headquarters here in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Didn't burn it down. Thanks to Chris Garber and Bill Lack, and then the week before to Doug Gray and Nick Kirby. All were fantastic. Hope you enjoyed those episodes, because I certainly did as I was on the road on vacation. Enjoyed listening to those. I did not appreciate all the jabs that Bill and Chris took at my expense, but you know, that's what you get when you leave them in charge. And I'm hopeful that that Nate will be a little kinder to me today. You know, I thought that the first thing we'd be talking about in this episode was going to be the trade deadline, because all that is going on right now, but that's not where we're going to start. But before we get into exactly the topic that everyone's talking about in Reds Land, let me just kind of briefly recap where the Reds are. Coming out of the All-Star break, the Reds lost 3 in a row to the Milwaukee Brewers. Just a disastrous, disastrous stretch. They went from 4 games out at the break to 7.5 games out, or to 7 games out, and then 7.5 the next night when they lost to the Mets. They lose 2 of 3 to the Mets right after that, and it's starting to look like, oh, great, here are the Reds again. But then they win 2 out of 3 against St. Louis, and then 3 out of 4 in Chicago. So the Reds are now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, won 5 of the last 7. 6 of their last 9, and all of a sudden, you know, they're not gaining a whole lot of ground yet, unfortunately, but they're starting to look more like the team we were hoping for. Before we get into the topic of the day, what are your thoughts about where the Reds are right now? And just what are your kind of, you know, 20,000 feet level view of this team, where they stand right now, really with about 60 games to go?
Well, I could be mistaken, you know, my old age is getting to me, but I seem to remember a team back in 2010 that also got swept right out of the gates post All-Star break.
Interesting.
So I love making parallels to previous teams, but I remember that I think I was at one of those games, and there might have been a brawl. You know, we didn't have any of those fireworks. We almost had them against the Cubs a couple days ago, but I got to tell you, one of the things I love the most about baseball, especially this Reds team and their you know, history of futility, at least during my lifetime, is the optimism that comes when things get exciting, when it's going well. This team is just fun to root for. It's, no matter what happens for the rest of the season, I'm not going to have had a bad time. There's been plenty to complain about. I'm sure we'll get into a lot of it, but some moves were made. The Reds play hard. They like each other, and they're not out of it. There is still plenty of time to crawl back into not just the wild card, but this division race.
Yeah, and we'll probably get into that a little bit more. I think probably the division is more likely even at this point, given what all is going on. But yeah, I think you point to something that I've said a lot and that a lot of us have said, which is this is a frustrating organization. They've screwed a lot of things up in the front office, in the higher levels. But this team on the field, I mean, they probably only have 18 real major league players, but man, those players are fun to watch. And you're right. They do seem like, and this is, I never know if it's really a thing that they like each other, but boy, they seem like it. Maybe, you know, that's something that you always look at in retrospect. Maybe the guys on losing teams like each other too, but nobody ever says it. But man, they sure seem like they enjoy playing with each other, and they're just, they're fiery. And, I think I called them at, Cincinnati Magazine, one of my columns early in the year, the Rowdy Reds. Little rowdiness this week again, but let's go ahead and talk about what we really need to be talking about. Joseph Daniel Votto. Now, you're one of the reasons I like talking to you about the Reds is that you have a little different perspective, and you alluded to it a moment ago, which is that you've never really seen a really good Reds team. You've never seen a championship. You've never experienced that because of your age. How does Joey Votto, where does he fit in kind of your life as a Reds fan in terms of the players that you've gotten to see? And how does he stand out? I guess what I'm asking is he like Barry Larkin was for me, the Red that's, you know, all, a Red his whole career, Hall of Famer? Is that kind of where he is in your, does that question make sense, or am I just kind of rambling?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I've been thinking about it more lately, as I imagine a lot of Reds fans have been over the past, you know, 6 days and even the last few years. But I'm sitting at a desk right now with a picture behind me of four of the Big Red Machine. I got Johnny Bench, Tony Perez, Joe Morgan, and Pete Rose. And I look at that and I'm thinking, like, man, what a fun time that must have been for Reds fans. And I was 5 years old when they won in 1990, so I don't remember it or anything. We definitely watched the videos, and I got to, you know, make fun of the Where's Quinonia's lady plenty of times. But
excellent.
Even Larkin, you know, I got to be there in person for his last game ever, but you don't appreciate it when you're that age. Watching Joey Votto go about his business and become one of the greatest, not just Major League Baseball hitters, like during his generation, arguably, and I know this is, you know, a bit controversial, but arguably the best hitter in Reds history.
Yeah.
And it's just so much fun to root for. His antics on and off the field combined. Has there been a more likable player since Adam Dunn? I don't think so. Now, he's not in Adam Dunn's league.
Who is?
But other than Dunner, I think he is 100% my favorite Red and the best Red, certainly, of my lifetime. I love Larkin. Larkin is, you know, he was synonymous with my love for baseball growing up, but Votto's something else. He's something special.
Yeah, for a generation that's not had a lot to cheer for. Unfortunately, I don't get the sense that a lot of Reds fans really have truly appreciated Votto, and I hope this year his kind of renaissance is given a new appreciation for Joey Votto. But yeah, you kind of alluded to something that I was thinking about bringing up later, but I'm glad to get into it right now. The way he's kind of, you know, settled into his own skin over the course of his career, you know, he's kind of gradually but steadily gotten more outgoing and showed his personality more to the point now where you can't take your eyes off him. He's a joy to watch. Oh, and by the way, he's playing incredibly, incredibly well. So let's get into the facts of it. Joey Votto, well, before this weekend, one player in the history of the Cincinnati Reds, and we're talking about a long history of the Cincinnati Reds, one player had ever had 6 home runs in a single series. That was a guy named Johnny Bench that you may have heard of. That was in 1970. That was Bench's first MVP year. He had 6 versus in a series versus the Cardinals. Well, Joey Votto this week, 6 home runs in one series versus the Cubs, 6 consecutive games with a home run, 8 home runs over those 6 games, new franchise record there. Can any of us truly say we saw this coming? I couldn't.
I think it's impossible. This guy was considered a high average, high on base percentage contact hitter. Like he had a couple seasons around his MVP year that where he had some power, but other than that, those were outliers. To do this at his age is, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it's certainly unprecedented in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I'm going to confess that, and I have to confess because it's in print on the digital pages of Cincinnati Magazine, of doubting Joey Votto. You know, after the 2019 season, he just was not good. He was a below average hitter, according to OPS Plus, for the first time in his career. And then last year, 2020, the beginning of that shortened campaign, halfway through, he was hitting 191. 321 on base, 326 slugging, and went 0 for 18 near the end of August against St. Louis and Milwaukee, and nobody wanted to believe it, but we had a long track record here of what became a large sample size showing that it's the same age related decline that everybody has. You know, father time is undefeated, as I always say, and so David Bell benches him. And Votto responds not by sulking, not by criticizing the manager. He responds by changing everything. He changed his stance. He's standing more upright. He changed his approach at the plate. Understand that I'm just going to try to hit home runs, basically. And that's what he said actually today after the game. I'm trying to hit home runs. That's why I'm hitting home runs. Rather than trying to control the strike zone like he did during his great seasons. Because he just recognized, as an older player, I can't do that like I used to do it. And still get the bat around.
Father time is undefeated. You can't defeat father time.
Right. But you know what? No one else that I know of has made a change like that. And overnight, he became an elite hitter, frankly, again. It's mind-boggling to me. I guess if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Joey Votto. But it's just, I still can't believe it. Yes, I criticized him I didn't criticize him. I said, here we are. We're finally seeing. It had to happen eventually. Votto's going to decline. Well, now I'm not so sure he's ever going to decline.
You can be forgiven for any of those takes. He wasn't passing the eye test back then either. Looked bad. He looked lost at the plate, which was something you could never say about this man for his entire career. So having those takes, they're not bad takes. They were true at the time. But he somehow found a way to battle back and reinvent himself into, at least as we stand on July 29, 2021, maybe the most feared hitter in the game.
He's 37. That's not possible. I don't know. Most feared for the last week and a half, certainly. But he is up near the league leaders in OPS. He is he's back in the elite category of hitters all of a sudden. And it happened almost overnight from that benching. I mean, these numbers, I'll run through them quickly, and some of these won't mean anything to any of you. But he's a .278 average. Again, we're used to a higher average from him. A .373 on base percentage. Which is very good, but again, still below what we knew as typical Votto when he led the league in on-base percentage so many times. .556 slugging percentage. And then two of these advanced metrics that you don't have to know what they mean, but I'm just going to tell you, these numbers I'm about to spout at you are excellent and up within the elite category. .393 weighted on-base average, .144 weighted runs created plus. Yeah, just... I guess the question I have for you, Nate, is there anything Joey Votto can't do?
Is there anything he can't do? I mean, give birth. I think that's the only thing that I will
perhaps
disqualify him from being able to do. Other than that, I think the world's his oyster, and I'm just happy to be along for the ride.
Yeah. I think that's the point there, is that we go from a period where we loved watching him. You talked about your love for watching his career, to now we got a chance to, hey, you know what? We're going to get to enjoy him for a little bit longer, it looks like. And who knows how long, again, father time. But we've been saying it for years. Enjoy every at-bat with this guy, because someday he's going to be gone. He's going to retire. And you're going to miss him, because we may never see anyone like him in a Reds uniform ever again. So will you pledge to me that you're going to enjoy every at-bat from this point forward, Nate?
I can promise you that. That won't be a problem.
You want to talk about the trade deadline a little bit?
I mean, I guess we have to.
We do, and I'm of a couple of minds about what happened at the trade deadline. And let me just run through it really quickly, and then we can dive a little bit deeper into it. The Reds kind of surprised us this week by, somebody must have poked General Manager Nick Crawl with a stick, and he made a couple of trades. And they are trades that helped the Reds. I'm happy with the trades. The Reds are better after these trades. I'm not sure I'm ready to, give awards to the front office just yet, but they're still, they're still, as we record this on Thursday evening, they're still you know, a day left in the before the trade deadline, so maybe they can do something more. But what they did was good. The first trade was the Reds made a deal with the New York Yankees to acquire right-handed pitcher Luis Sessa and left-handed pitcher Justin Wilson, both relief pitchers, and the Reds are going to send a player to be named later to complete that deal. So two pitchers who we'll talk about a little bit more, and they also designated Ashton Godot and Edgar Garcia for assignment at that time. Later traded Ashton Godot, if that means anything to you. The Reds traded Ashton Godot to the Colorado Rockies for cash considerations. I've never heard of that player, cash considerations, but hope he's good. And the second trade was with the Colorado Rockies. The Reds got Michael Givens in exchange for a couple of players, Case Williams, who had come over from Colorado over the offseason, the Jeff Hoffman, Robert Stevenson trade, and prospect, quote-unquote prospect, Noah Davis. And the Reds designated Josh Osich for assignment to make room for Givens. So three relievers in a basically a 12-hour span, pretty much. Now, what was your reaction when the Reds finally started trading, and do you have any quick thoughts about these deals and what they mean for the Reds?
My first reaction, obviously, was, holy smokes, the Reds did something. I can't believe this.
Yeah, me too.
It's been a fun season, so I think anybody who follows the Reds closely is going to be pretty excited that they quickly made, you know, a couple quick moves to address the most glaring concern on the roster. I mean, you can argue about shortstop, but this bullpen has been atrocious through no fault of the players that have been thrown out there. You know, they weren't qualified to be doing what they were asked to do. The Reds got some guys. I got some opinions about all of them, but hey, I can't complain. You can't lose. You know, say one thing and then get upset when it happens. Let's go. Welcome to Reds country. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And it's a really good point. People get really angry online. You may have heard that this is a thing that goes on in the world. And people get so mad at Ashton Godot and Josh Osich. And what you just said is so true. They were out there on the mound trying the hardest they could to be good pitchers for the Cincinnati Reds. You know, I don't blame them. They were just put in positions that they just weren't qualified for. And that's on the front office. That's on management. Luis Sessa is the guy that I really like out of this. Luis Sessa, just for those of you that don't know, he's 29 years old. Signed with the Mets at age 16 as an international free agent. And basically throws four pitches, a slider, four-seam fastball, sinker, and a changeup. And Sessa, in his major league career, has been, he's been good. I think that's what I'll say. You know, I mean, he was not great at age 24, 25, 26, but he was fine. He was fine. Age 26, he had a rough year. But then, you know, 2019 with the Yankees, 111 ERA plus, so a little better than average. And then 131 ERA plus in 2020, so a really good year. And this year, just by far the best of his career so far. He was 3-1 with the Yankees at 2.82 ERA. And, you know, in his first outing with the Reds yesterday, looked pretty good. This is a guy that I'm happy to have in the bullpen. Is he a savior? No. Is he the closer of the future or the closer of right now? No. But, man, he's better than whoever he replaced. That's the way I look at it. So I'm happy to have Sessa. What about you?
Oh, 100%. I definitely agree with your opinion. He's not going to be, you know, the return of Earlis Chapman. But, hey, this guy is controllable through 2023, if I'm not mistaken. We're all excited about this year and this team. But let's be honest, we could be just as good next year. Having this guy at a low price tag for the next few years, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm excited to have him.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point that I neglected to mention, which is that, yeah, he's under control. Yes, he's here to help this year's team, but I like having him going forward. Quickly about Justin Wilson, who they also got. Justin Wilson's 33. Justin Wilson has not had a good season. He's a 10-year veteran of the big leagues. Basically two pitches, four-seam fastball and a cutter. He has had good years, had very good years. certainly with Detroit and with Pittsburgh, with the Yankees previously, and then back with the Yankees. But he's had a rough go of it this season. But last year, 3.66 ERA. 2 years ago with the Mets, 2.54 ERA, 164 ERA plus. I don't know, he's also looked good in his first outing with the Reds, although he did walk a guy. But basically, Wilson was a salary dump, is the general consensus. The Yankees making a salary dump. but that's the consensus. But still, I think that despite all that, and despite the fact he was kind of the second piece in this, again, he's still better than the guy he's replacing, right?
Oh, 100%. I think he might have been the tax to get Sessa.
Yeah.
If that's the case, bring it on. He's a buy low, high reward kind of guy who has had extended success in the major leagues. You're right, this year's been a dumpster fire, but even so, like you said, it's better than the people we've been trotting out every day. So I love it. I love Justin Wilson. We've seen it, time and time again over the years. Some people just fizzle out with the Yankees. The Yankees have a hard, players have a hard time playing in that market. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Sonny Gray, but that worked out pretty well. And he got the sense he maybe we can see a little bit more of the same from Justin Wilson.
There we go. Justin Wilson is Sonny Gray version 2.0. You heard it here first. I think you triggered something in my mind that I hadn't really thought about it. A lot of these guys we've been throwing out are guys who've been released by five different teams and have never had that success in the leagues. At least Wilson has. Do we want to give credit to Bob Castellanos for agreeing to take on a little bit of extra salary that he wouldn't otherwise? I have a hard time doing that because the Reds are still far behind what they gave away in Archie Bradley and Rosell Iglesias, all the money they saved from that. It's not like they saved that money to get a shortstop, we were told. But still, it's not necessarily a game changer, but the Reds are better after getting Sessa and Wilson than they were the day before, and that's progress. Michael Givens. The next day, Michael Givens came from the Rockies in exchange for, as I said, Case Williams and Noah Davis. Now, Michael Givens, 31 years old, former second-round pick of the Baltimore Orioles. He throws a four-seam fastball, a changeup, and a slider. Michael Givens has had a pretty good career. He's had a pretty good career, pretty consistent career out of the bullpen. He's, again, not a closer, but has been a consistently above-average pitcher every single year. He got to Colorado, and things looked a little bit different because it's Colorado, but he came in his first appearance for the Reds and struck out the side. What are your thoughts on Givens? To me, he looks like he may be the best of the bunch, although I do like Sessa as well. You got any thoughts?
This was the easiest one for me to wrap my head around. I'm sold by anybody who tweets out a picture of themselves as a small child wearing Reds gear.
Right, yeah.
He knew how to endear himself to the Reds fans immediately. What shocked me the most about this one was he was a free agent after this season. This was, at least on the surface, a signal that the front office is considering the thought of winning now. They want to. He's a great player. He's an established, very, very good Major League Baseball reliever, and I wish we could have had him a month ago.
Yeah, really. Noah Davis was one of the guys that the Reds gave up for Givens. And, we're talking about a 24-year-old still pitching an A-ball. I can't get too upset about that. Case Williams, fourth rounder formerly, but again, he was in low A this year, but he's young still. But he wasn't doing very well. I never have a problem with trading anybody, and that's never been above single A ever. I never have a problem with that. But yeah, that's a good point about Givens. I don't think we need to say that it's that the Reds are all in or they're going for it. But this was clearly a trade that was designed just to help them this year, and they gave up a little bit of prospect capital for it. And so, I'm happy, but I'm also like, come on. there's still, 18 hours left or whatever. How about making a real trade? We're better. The Reds are better. And maybe there is more to come. But the problem is the Brewers traded for an all-star third baseman, Eduardo Escobar from the Diamondbacks. And he's good. He's not great, but he's good. And the Padres and Dodgers, who the Reds are fighting against for the wild card, are just going nuts. They're fighting over the latest. I don't know if you saw this latest rumor. The Dodgers are trying to. The Padres were mentioned as the location that Max Scherzer was going to end up. Well, now the Dodgers jumped in, and they may be near the end of a deal for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner from the Washington Nationals. I mean, those teams are really going for it, and the Reds got some nice little relievers that helped them, and that's good. They're better, but the competition is not just sitting and watching either. That's kind of my biggest problem with the Reds' performance at the trade deadline. People are going to give them all kinds of credit for getting some guys, and it's good that they got these guys, but other teams are trying to win. And you kind of alluded to that a moment ago. Really, actually trying to win.
As much fun as I'm having on this podcast, I keep hoping that I'll wake up in a minute and the Dodgers don't actually get Max Scherzer and Trey Turner.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, they aren't even winning their division. Is like, it feels like that's lucky for anybody else trying to contend. Getting those two, it just sort of justifies what you've been saying over and over for months, maybe even years. Some front offices, and granted, right, they have the payroll of the gods. They can spend all the money they want. But some fan bases and some front offices, they want and are willing to do whatever it takes. The Reds have shown time and time again that, hey, we'll do some little things. We hear you chirping. We hear Chad talking. We want some relievers. We'll get you some relievers. But the payroll's not moving.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just a matter of other things are more important than winning. And I don't think you can say that about the Dodgers or the Padres now. And the Brewers, too. Not that their payroll's way up high, but, they traded for a shortstop early in the season that the Reds really could have used, Willie Adames. And I wanted to ask you about this. With these relievers, I'm happy to have these relievers. I don't want to toss water on it. I'm happy to have these guys. I think the Reds are better than they were last week. And that's good. And I want to be excited about that because I do like this team. And when I say I like this team, I'm not saying I like the Cincinnati Reds, which I guess I do, but I like this group of players. And there are now three more players maybe there's 21 major league players on this team now. But can you imagine if the Reds had done this 2 months ago, 3 months ago, acquired these relievers?
One of the things that's kind of frustrating to me is that, after these moves, you're seeing the Reds designate players for assignment that they were running out in the eighth and ninth innings of close ball games within a week or two ago.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not saying these players aren't good enough to be on a major league team, at least ours, why were you running them out 2 weeks ago if you're just going to kick them to the curb now? That's what's frustrating to me. They knew this needed to be addressed. They knew these weren't, major league caliber players. And again, we said it over and over, no fault to them. They're trying their best and they seem to be very likable. I root for them. I hope they have continued success for their careers. But the front office folks they're there for a reason. They know what's going on and they knew these people weren't going to cut it, yet they trotted them out there day after day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fact. And if the Reds had done this 2 months ago, maybe we've got an extra 5 wins. I mean, I don't think that's crazy to say, given how the bullpen has blown game after game after game. And if you've got 5 extra wins, I mean, think about that. The Reds right now are 54-49. Let's add 5 wins. Let's add 4 wins, 58-45. And all of a sudden, this is one of the better teams in the league. And it's just so frustrating that the front office would not, or ownership, whoever's at fault, would not do that. I'm interested to see how many of these guys that are designated for assignment actually get claimed by someone else, because I don't expect there to be a whole lot of interest. Although Ashton Godot, the Rockies evidently claimed him because they have a spot in their bullpen, I guess, now that they traded Michael Givens here. The real winner
in all this is Ashton Godot. I think he's been claimed off of waivers 6 times. This guy is making great money, getting to live in all kinds of different cities. I hope him and his family are having a blast.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some great stories when he finally retires forcibly, probably at some point. Do we have an opinion on Michael Givens spelling his name M-Y-C-H-A-L? I think I love that for some reason. I'm just not sure why.
No opinion. I mean, it's 2021. I don't think you're allowed to spell it anything the way it was spelled pre-2012, maybe. We'll call it 2012. So, Michael, I think we're going to see him more and more often. And since he's now my newest favorite reliever for the Reds, I love it. The only way to spell it.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to have any more children, but if I did, I probably would name him Michael and spell it that way in honor of the guy. And I agree. I was like you. I saw that on Twitter, the pictures that he tweeted out of him as a kid wearing the Reds uniforms. And yeah, that guy knew what he was doing when he tweeted that out. And they showed it on the broadcast.
I would like to apologize to Michael Lorenzen for my Michael subject.
Oh, Michael Lorenzen. Maybe Michael Lorenzen should change his spelling of his name, and you know, maybe he'll be able to stay healthy. Oh, he's supposed to be back soon. That's what came out today, was that Lorenzen is hoping to be back soon for the Reds. Things are going well. Who knows? We'll see. Nick Senzel starting his rehab assignment, and Mike Moustakas will be starting a rehab assignment. And that brings me to the next topic, especially the Senzel and Moustakas portions of it, which is that we have to have a conversation about Eugenio Suarez. I don't want to have this conversation. Go ahead.
Don't want to.
No. Oh, I don't think you and I have actually talked about Gino. It's what I wrote about this week at the magazine, and it was the hardest thing to write ever because I had to say bad things about a guy that I just... You talk about Votto being the most likable. In my head, I was thinking, I don't know. Eugenio Suarez may be the most likable player of my lifetime. He's just so likable, and he's not getting it done. But I don't think we've talked about it. Do you have some opinions about the Suarez and what's going on and what the Reds need to do?
You and I have not talked about it. One of the things that it just makes me sad. I'm willing to throw out anything that I know about baseball in support of Eugenio Suarez. Like, I know it doesn't make sense, but I like him so much that I want him to get the at-bats. I want him to be put in the heart of the lineup and be protected. Though I know that if I was the manager, that's not an option. You cannot do that with a player that is performing the way he is. And it's heartbreaking because, like you just said, he's so likable. And the talent is there. It's obvious. He has succeeded at the major league level in incredible ways. I don't know what the deal is, but, you know, we're in the chase. Like, we have a chance to make the playoffs. And I think he has a negative 2-something WAR. Like
2.2, yeah. Negative 2.2. Yeah.
Oh. It hurts.
It hurts. It hurts because he's... Oh, gosh. All right, so anyway, we've talked about it 100 times on the podcast. He hurt his shoulder diving in the pool before last season, and he's just not been the same since. And when I published... I haven't updated these numbers, but when I published the piece at the magazine earlier this week, he'd played in 152 games since coming back from that injury. So basically a full season, 625 plate appearances. During that time, 182 batting average, 277 on base, 400 slugging. His OPS plus, 71. So that means roughly 29% worse than the average big league hitter. Right now in this season, 98 games that he's played in, well, 99 including today, but 174 average, 257 on base, 58 OPS plus. And again, 100 is average. The case I was forced to make, I felt like, and I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are. Let's fast forward to the time when either Nick Senzel or Mike Moustakas returns to the active lineup. Is there any justification for keeping Eugenio Suarez in the starting lineup at that point? My answer was no.
Other than fanhood, I can't think of one. It seems like the early reports are that they're prepping Nick Senzel to be sort of a utility man. You know, play 5 or 6 days a week at a bunch of different positions, and that's great. He's a great defender.
If he can stay healthy,
If he can stay healthy. I don't know how you keep trotting him out there. I feel like in the past you've seen teams you know, go with the Phantom DL stint or IL stint. Like, this guy's just, you know, he's pressing, so let's put him on the 10-day, let's put him on the 30-day, so you can see if maybe the doctors can find something. I don't know. I can talk myself into Suarez, the pinch hitter extraordinaire. I mean, it's nice having a guy off the bench that can, you know, hit one out of the park.
Yeah.
But
he has 19 home runs.
I'm not going to pretend that I'm Moustakas' biggest believer. I like him as a player, but we'll see. But he has to be given a chance. And I think that the odd man out in that situation has got to be Eugenio.
Yeah.
I mean, not enjoy saying it.
I know, right. Let's imagine the day that Moustakas gets back. Until Moustakas gets back, my opinion is, of the people on the current roster, you're going to start Mike Freeman? I mean, come on. You kind of got to keep trotting Suarez out there. Maybe I bet him eighth, but you kind of got to keep trotting him out there. Some people say Alejo Lopez, but come on. I mean, I think I would stick with Suarez. But when Moustakas is on the roster, I thought what was going to happen was that Suarez would finally get it together and they'd just move him back to shortstop, where he's an awful shortstop defensively. But I thought that's what would happen, and then and Farmer would go to the bench. But you look at the numbers, and we're going to talk some more about Kyle Farmer, but even before his latest hot streak, you couldn't hardly argue that Suarez was any better than Farmer, especially when you include defense, because Farmer's defense has been not as good as they want you to believe on the Reds broadcast. None of the metrics show that, but it's been fine. And so we're at the point where Kyle Farmer's a better option for your lineup than Eugenio Suarez, and I don't envy David Bell having to make that decision. You got a former All-Star, former 49 home run guy, but David Bell doesn't have any choice. Suarez has got to go to the bench, especially if Moustakas is going to be back soon. And man, how do we get here? You mentioned the DLs. Go ahead.
Sorry, I can't believe we live in a world where you can soundly make the argument that Kyle Farmer is a better option for a major league starting lineup than Suarez.
Yeah, it's completely insane. It's gone straight out of my head. Something I wanted to comment on. He's 29 years old. I know what it was. You mentioned maybe the quote unquote Phantom DL stand. We do see those occasionally. I think we had one with Sonny Gray recently. The problem is, I think that the player has to kind of agree with it, or there's going to be a problem with the union. And Suarez keeps saying he's healthy. He's been saying he's 100% healthy from that shoulder ever since it happened. But I got to tell you, I don't know if that's the reason, but that's the point where he fell off a cliff and has not been the same since that shoulder injury. And he's never even really looked the same. The way I ended that piece about Suarez was just, this makes a tear run down my cheek. Because I do love the guy, but come on, we gotta kind of tell the truth here, I think, right? He's just not the guy.
It's different if we're 10 games under 500, which we're so used to being, and we can let him work it out on his own. It's not often that as Reds fans we get to root for a winner. By winner, I don't mean a team that makes the playoffs, a team that finishes above 500.
Yes, please.
And we have that opportunity right now. And man, more than anything, I want him to be a part of it. But
he's not helping.
It's literally in the pudding. He is a negative 2.2 WAR. You can't argue with it.
Yeah. We kind of need to address the Kyle Farmer thing, because people are going nuts over Kyle Farmer. And let me tell you, Kyle Farmer, for the last 50 at-bats, has been unbelievable. He's been the second coming of, Joey Votto, but Barry Larkin, maybe, since he's playing shortstop. I made the suggestion on the Twitters, and you should never make any suggestions on the Twitters because people are going to say dumb things to you, but that it's time for Jose Barrero, who just moved up. I wish I pulled it up here. He just moved way up in the Baseball America prospect rankings. Highest ranked, I think, Reds prospect. I think he moved ahead of Hunter Green. But anyway, 23 years old and destroyed the ball at Chattanooga in Double A, and now just absolutely killing the ball at AAA. We know he came up last year and he was not ready for the big leagues during last year's season, but he has done nothing but hit since day one in the minor leagues and showed why he's that big time prospect. 309 average in AAA now, 404 on base, 553 slugging. He's hitting home runs. He's just incredible. And I made the suggestion that it's time to bring Barrero up. You know, he's shown he could do it at AA, AAA. And again, we're just talking 25 games at AAA, but still, he's not skipped a beat. What do you think about the idea, even in the midst of Kyle Farmer's career best, run here, of bringing Barrero up? And is it insane to say that?
I've got a couple thoughts. The first one would be, you know who else looked pretty good for about 2 weeks, and I think everybody in the Twitter sphere tried to tell us about it? The Reds bullpen had a good 2 weeks.
Oh, yes.
Let's not let a good 2 weeks make a player's career. And I'd say this with all due respect to Kyle Farmer. I enjoyed watching this young man play baseball this year. He plays hard. I got no complaints about what he's done. This is not in any way a commentary on Kyle Farmer. I think he is a wonderful role player for a team with playoff aspirations. That said, bring up Jose Barrero. He's a wonderful ball player. He's crushing it right now. Anybody who says, oh, well, what happened last year? He didn't hit last year when he came up. You know who else didn't hit last year? The Cincinnati Reds.
That's true.
The entire team was visible. I don't see how, and we have a glaring shortstop hole. I don't see a justification for not giving the kid a chance. He's fun. He's exciting. He's just crushing it right now. He should have been brought up yesterday.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely true. And again, I said something about, about that on Twitter, and I had two or three people say, "Why have all the Kyle Farmer hate?" I'm like, point me to the tweet where I've shown any Kyle Farmer hate. I don't hate Kyle Farmer. Guy plays his butt off, plays hard. He's done everything the Reds have asked of him. But even with this crazy hot streak recently, his OPS plus, again, 100's average, his OPS plus this season's 83. Okay, so 17% below. That's a career high for him at age 30. Last year was 68. His career is 77. Why would we think a 30-year-old is all of a sudden going to turn into some elite hitter? It's just, I love the way you put it about the Reds bullpen, because for a couple weeks, everybody's like, all right, we're fine now, Not everybody, but certain people. My buddy, Woo the Reds on Twitter, who will not tell me his real name, one of our friends here of the podcast, he had a great tweet, and he said, I want to see the Venn diagram of the people who think Kyle Farmer is great right now and the people who thought Luis Castillo was finished when he was struggling earlier in the year. It's the same people. It's a recency bias thing, and I'm so happy that Kyle, I hope he keeps hitting like this. I would give anything for him to keep hitting like this. I want that. He's helping the Reds. But
I love it.
Exactly, but why would anyone look at his career and think he can keep this up? It's completely silly. I don't know why we're even pretending like he's the answer at shortstop. And a lot of people, if my mentions on Twitter are any evidence, a lot of people think he's the answer. He's proven it now. Am I losing my mind?
No, you're spot on. I think if Kyle Farmer keeps it up, don't get me wrong, love to have him, but if he finishes the season this strong, I'm sure the Angels will overpay him.
was that a little Zach Cozart shade there?
I mean, it's more angel shade.
Okay, all right. Zach Cozart. Angel, I love it.
I don't get it. I mean, yes, let's root for this guy. I would have no problem with him being a Red a long time. He reminds me a lot of my favorite Reds over the years with just how hard he plays and how willing he is to go and do what the team asks for him. But let's also not pretend he's the second coming of Barry Larkin.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of it. He's got the Chris Stein's thing. The Cincinnati's always got this thing for, some scrappy white guy. Let's call it what it is. And he's got that. And he does play hard. I don't have a problem with Kyle Farmer. I don't hate Kyle Farmer. And in fact, to prove that I don't hate him, let's say Mike Moustakas returns tomorrow to the Reds lineup. You know what I would probably do? I would either shift. Well, I would, or let's say Jose Barrero comes up tomorrow. That's what I meant to say. Not Mushak, because he's a few weeks off. Let's say Jose Barrero does come up tomorrow and takes over shortstop for the Reds. I'd move Kyle Farmer to third and set Eugenio Suarez on the bench. That's what I do for now. I mean, he's a better hitter this year. Until Suarez figures it out, I actually would keep Kyle Farmer in the lineup. I don't hate the guy. What do you think about that? Moving him over to third if we did get Barrero. And I don't know that we're going to get him soon, but that we should. Is that what you would do?
I think it's a hard move. If you were the, you know, obviously I can't pretend to speak for a, you know, professional caliber front office guy, but it's going to be hard to wire your brain that way. But I think if you're just looking at the numbers and what gives the Reds the best chance to win today, whose bat do you want in that lineup? Whose glove do you want in the lineup? Kyle Farmer, unfortunately, somehow against all odds, wins that argument against Suarez. 10 times out of 10, and I can't believe I'm saying it. I agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. How is that possible that we're saying Kyle Farmer has been better than Gino? One last thing before we take on some viewer mail questions here, because I do want to mention this. Kind of, we've not really talked about it, but this little streak here recently, the Reds playing well, has happened with Nick Castellanos on the injured list. That's been kind of gratifying to watch. You know, reminded me of, 2012, I guess it was, when Votto got injured and the team kind of came together without him. That's been kind of fun to watch, but also, hey, he's coming back soon. I can't wait to get that guy back. How much do we love Nick Castellanos? I guess that's the question I want to get to, because that's what I love talking about. How much do we love Nick Castellanos?
It reminds me a whole lot of the Puig years when we got all the excitement of having Yasiel Puig, but this guy's actually good.
Yeah, the Puig months, but yeah, this guy's actually can play, right? Yeah, exactly.
Was it all the excitement, all the adrenaline, the aggression, and man, I can't wait till he comes back. Just like you said, remember 2012 when Votto went down? I think everybody thought the team was done; they were sunk. Somehow, these people they rally behind it, and get together. It's certainly not a Bill Simmons Ewing theory by any means, because
yeah. The Ewing theory.
Yeah,
you gotta
go a little deeper than that. But for this team to not only tread water, but to win some meaningful games without who seems to be the heart and soul of their lineup, I mean, I think it says a lot about all the other guys.
Definitely, definitely. Couldn't agree more. Now, but before we get into viewer mail, I gotta say, I've got some breaking news here, Nate. Breaking news on the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. With the 17th pick in the NBA first round of the NBA draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Trey Murphy III from the University of Virginia. Trey Murphy selected in the first round of the NBA draft. Comes from Rice University. Nobody ever heard of him, and becomes a first rounder in 1 year. Oh, Tony Bennett. Sorry, Nate. As you well know, I tend to digress when it comes to the Hoos. You want to answer some viewer mail questions?
Hey, bring them on.
Before we do that, as we do, I've been gone for a couple of weeks. We've got a couple of new subscribers, and, a little disappointed we only had two, guys. A little disappointed we only had two new subscribers this week at patreon.com/redlegradio. Not disappointed at all. I'm kidding, obviously. I'm so thankful that some of you would step up and support the podcast, and I hope more of you will, but, again, this podcast, it's free. It's every Friday free. But there's some goodies at Patreon if you want to join the family, and we have a pretty good time with that group. Nate, our typical, what's the word? You know, I don't know, but what we typically do here is we get a new subscriber. We got to give them a position on the beer league softball team. And I feel bad because I've been gone for the last couple of weeks. These two guys haven't gotten their position on the Red Leg Nation Radio beer league softball team. So we're going to do that right now. First comes Nicholas Sparks. Nicholas Sparks is a new friend, new member of the family. Thank you so much, Nicholas, for joining us. Now, Nate, off the top of your head, what position does Nicholas Sparks, think about that name. What does that tell you? What position is he playing on our beer league softball team?
So I'm going to go in a couple different directions. My initial gut reaction was this guy is a lights out, flame throwing, late inning reliever, maybe even a closer. But as soon as I thought that, for some reason, my mind shifted to a tall, lanky, power-hitting first baseman And since beer league softball teams don't have closers, I'm leaning towards first baseman.
Interesting, because it's funny. I had a couple of thoughts as well. One of them was that he was a I had him as left-handed, but a lights-out left-handed closer. I thought this guy's an end-of-the-game shutdown reliever. The other thought that I had
was this works.
Yeah, yeah. We may have to go with that, but the other thought I had was that he might be the team's novelist, Nicholas Sparks, a novelist. You think maybe he's a novelist?
Thank you. Maybe he, in the spare time, he brings the mood of the team way down. I hope not. I appreciate Nick.
All right. Well, we're going to say he's a dual threat guy, slugging first baseman and a big-time left-handed reliever. Nicholas, thank you so much for joining us. Next up comes Matthew Lee. Matthew Lee joined us earlier this month. Thank you so much for that, Matthew. When I see Matthew, my thought here is that he's a starting pitcher, but he's a junk baller. And maybe I'm thinking of Bill Lee, the old Red Sox. That's a little for your time, a little for my time too, actually. But the old Red Sox pitcher in the 70s, mid-70s, among other teams, and the Spaceman, they called him. And so I think we got our own Spaceman now. Matthew Spaceman Lee throws an Ephus pitch, but people can't hit him. So that's my thought. Did you have any thoughts?
I was looking back at the roster construction of this beer league softball team, and I was thinking that we needed a spaceman type guy. So I think Matthew Lee, you feel the gap. We needed you.
That's a gap we needed. Matthew, thank you so much. I really do. Can't tell you how much I appreciate all of you that support the podcast, and not just at Patreon, but all of you that support the podcast by downloading every week and sticking with us. Now, following us on Twitter and all that. Let's get into these viewer mail questions, and we've gone longer than I hoped, so we may have to do a little bit of rapid fire here. Nate, these questions, as always, come from, these are actual letters from actual viewers. If they weren't, could I do this? Actual letter in my hand. I don't know. I just, you know, I want to be David Letterman so much I can't stand it. My son just texted me that he's not sure what to think about the fact that Trey Murphy from the University of Virginia is going to be teammates with Zion Williamson from Duke. So I got to go have a talk with my young son. Yeah. First question comes from Mike Perry. And some of these questions, I meant to bring them up while we're having our discussion. Or some of them are things we've already talked about, but I want to mention a couple of them. Mike Perry says, three mediocre relievers help the Reds, but it's too little too late. Do you agree? And my first thought was mediocre. I'm not sure they're mediocre. They're not much higher than mediocre, but I think they are higher than mediocre. I think Wilson, maybe we can argue at this point in his career, he's not, but I think they help the team. Yes, they help the team. But I think Mike's right. Well, no, I don't think he's right necessarily. I mean, Mike Perry, you're always right. But on this one, too little, too late, maybe not. I would like it to happen 2 months ago. But we don't know yet that it's too little too late, and I guess here's me trying to be hopeful. Is that fair?
I think it's entirely fair. I did a little basic research, and there was a 1973 Mets team that was 11.5 games out of a playoff berth on August 5th. There is always hope, Mr. Perry.
Yeah, the 1973 Mets, famous of Bud Harrelson, Pete Rose fight in the National League Championship Series. But yeah, you're right. You're right.
I didn't want to talk about how that ended.
But yeah, right. I'm sorry I brought that up. Apologize. Seth Shaner, he has two things here. One we've definitely already talked about. The second one we'll talk about quickly. Two things to welcome Chad back to his throne. I'm back on my throne. Can Joey Votto do anything he sets his mind on? We've already discussed that. Probably. Maybe there are a few things that he's physically incapable of, but pretty much he can do anything. This has shown me that he's just superhuman. The other one's this. Should these moves work out, and there are more to come before the trade deadline, would you consider lifting your boycott, or are you firm on not attending games at Great American Ballpark in 2021? I won't talk much about this little personal boycott I've got going on. Seth asked me this occasionally, and some others at Patreon asked me this occasionally. They're trying to find exactly where the line is. And the line is this: I'm not going to Great American Ballpark this year. I'm not asking anyone else to do this. Go enjoy the games if you want to, but I'm just not giving Bob Castellan any of my money this year. Now, if they go out before the trade deadline and go nuts, if they go get Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, okay, it's going to tempt me. But I just, I've sort of drawn a line in the sand, and I'm not going to do it. You know, I've now been to four different Major League parks this year. Three of them are new parks I've never been to, and I've enjoyed getting to see some other places I haven't been to. The three that I hadn't been to before, PNC Park in Pittsburgh, Dodger Stadium, which was, I'm sorry for those of you that are 70s and 80s era Reds fan. Who hate the Dodgers still. That's a great stadium. And Busch Stadium in St. Louis, which, you know, I hate to say it. That's a nice stadium. But anyway, no, I'm not going to Great American Ballpark this year. I'm not. And I hate it. My wife was just, when we were on our trip, at one point we were talking about something. And she said, you know, I think this, other than last year, 2020, I think this will be the first year since we've been married, and we've been married a long time, that we've not gone to Great American Ballpark. I'm like, yeah, are you trying to guilt me into it? What's going on here? But I'm just not doing it. I don't know if you have any comment on that, whether you're going to join my boycott or not, but I don't know. I'll give you a chance to say if there's something you want to say to that, Nate. That's kind of, I don't know.
All I'll say is that I've known you for every single year of my life, and when you've set your mind towards something, there's no standing in the way of it. So.
Well, that's, you know, I just, that is what it is. I don't know. If the Reds made the World Series, I might backtrack. I had tickets to the World Series.
Go to the American League ballpark.
Now, there you go. There you go, Nate. I had tickets to the 2012 World Series. So sad. Next question comes from our buddy, Kyle Kapler. Kyle asks, will Gino Eugenio Suarez break Chris Davis's batting average record this year? Chris Davis, the legendarily rich Baltimore Oriole, who hit, I think, 168 in 2018. I think that might be the record he's talking about. He's hitting 115 this year, by the way. But Gino's, Gino's hitting 174. I'm going to say no, but that's a sad question to ask Kyle. Why would you try to harsh my mellow? What do you think? Yes or no, Nate?
I didn't appreciate the question, though. Yes. I understand that it doesn't make for good content, but my answer is no.
Why is Kyle doing this to us? I don't approve. Love you, Kyle, but come on, man. Joey Gaditza, our buddy from Canada. He always wants to talk about Joey Votto because he's from Canada. So here's his question. Welcome back, Chad. Hope your vacation was great. It was. I'm not going to talk about it, but we drove Route 66. You all should do that sometime. Does Joey Votto have the unique ability to just turn on the jets whenever he feels like it? I mean, his resurgence in power and the plays he's made in the field would suggest so. No, I don't think that's... He has a unique ability, but I wish he'd have come to this realization, you know, a year and a half earlier that I just can't do what I'm doing. But, it's personal. He was one of the best in the game at what he did for a long time. But he does have a unique ability that very, very few people on earth have. Is that a fair way to talk about Votto?
Yeah, that's perfect. The guy had a borderline Hall of Fame career based on one certain set of skills. Then those skills stopped working, so he developed brand new skills to solidify his Hall of Fame career. I don't think it was the resurgence or he turned on the jets. He adjusted and adapted the way that we all hope we could as we age.
Yeah. You just reminded me of something that my buddy Chris Garber said, I think earlier today. I want to get your take on that. Before this, this year, we all thought Votto was a Hall of Famer. And my personal feeling had been that he's not going to be first ballot, but he'll get in eventually. I think the voters at this point are, they're skewing a little bit younger and they understand how important on base percentage is and what Votto does, how important it was. But he wasn't a shoe-in to be a first ballot. And I still don't think he is, but Chris suggests that if he finishes out this year like this, it's going to cause a complete reevaluation because he will be one of the elite hitters in the league at age 37, and that it might strengthen his case to where he's all of a sudden maybe a first ballot guy. What do you think about that?
I think Chris is spot on. I think that anybody who's followed Votto or the Reds even remotely close would believe that he was a Hall of Famer before this season, and it is in question, but it shouldn't have been. The guy's one of the greatest hitters of my generation, for sure. And there are far worse players to get in. But to change your entire approach and become one of the better hitters in the entire league at this age when you already have a, we'll call it borderline case just for the sake of the conversation. I think it really does. I think it rewrites the narrative. I think that Chris is 100% correct in that.
Okay. I really hope he doesn't listen to this episode because I don't want to hear any complimentary talk about Chris Garber. He wrote the 25 worst chapters of a famous book that you may have heard of, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. That's not true, but if he gives me grief about it, I'll know he listened to the podcast. And if he doesn't, don't tell him. Michael Henry, two questions. First, is Kyle Farmer good? I'll let you answer that one, Nate. Nate, is Kyle Farmer good?
Good at what? Is he good at... I'm sure he's a great family man. He's an extremely good member to have on your active roster for a baseball club. He's a person that you want, someone you want to root for. Is he starting caliber major leaguer good? I don't want to say that.
Yeah.
But is he good? I mean, he's a major baseball player, so he's better at baseball than almost anyone on the planet.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder there. I've watched thousands of baseball players, from Little League all the way up to the major leagues. Kyle Farmer is one of the best of the players that have ever played baseball. He is. He's top, tenth of 1% probably of people that have played baseball. Better than me. So he's good at baseball. Yes, you can't get to the major leagues without being good at baseball. He's not good enough to be a... He's not going to be a starter. I'm sorry, those of you that love him. And there's a guy, really, I'm not going to mention his name here, but he emails me often. You know, if you're listening to this, you know I'm talking about you. And I really appreciate those emails. All season long, he's been a big Kyle Farmer guy. And I'm like, okay, dude, I don't agree with you, but I love that you're keeping the faith with Kyle Farmer, and that's fine. Nobody has to agree with me all the time. And keep emailing me. It doesn't bother me. Matter of fact, I enjoy it, even though as you said in your last email, agree to disagree. Kyle Farmer's just not good. He's been great in the last 2-3 weeks. He's been great, and I love it. I wish he would do that until he's 40 years old. I wish he would make me look stupid for saying that he's not great. I'm not going to bet the range that's going to happen. Michael Henry's second question, is Joey Votto God's greatest gift to mankind? Not sure I'm willing to go quite that far, but he's one of the natural wonders, seven, eight natural wonders of the world, I think. I mean, let me just say this.
He might be top five greatest gifts.
He might be. I agree. I went to the Grand Canyon for the first time on this last vacation, and that was one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen, but it ranks just below Joey Votto. All right, next question. James Urban. I'm not sure I understand the question, so I'm just going to let you answer this one, Nate. Glad to have you back. Here's the question. Does this team win? That's it. That's the question. Does this team win? A lot of ways you can take that. What do you think? Does this team win, Nate?
Well, I'm glad that this question was asked tonight. Yes. They won, and there's evidence that at some points throughout history, this team has occasionally won. Do they win at all? Shoot, hey. Why have dreams if you can't live in them? So the team does win on occasion. This is a fun team. We'll continue to root for them. Are they going to win anything big? Stranger things have happened. I am nothing if not an optimist.
Yeah, you're more of an optimist than me, and I've tried to be a pretty big optimist over the years. Yeah, but they're going to win games for the rest of the season, right? They are going to win some games. No question. Mm-hmm. All right. Nathan Connor. Hey, Dotson boys. I put a longer form version of this on the Slack channel. That's one of the benefits you get from being a patron at patreon.com/redlegradio. He said, but for viewer mail, it'll be brief. Yes, the front office is cheap, but shouldn't the baseball operations department bear some of the blame for what this bullpen has been? I think these moves this week are mostly for next year and are an indication they want to turn over the pen quite a bit. This is a head start on winter business. Thoughts? My quick thoughts, and I'll let you weigh in, Nate. I don't think we know how much the front office is to blame, or the baseball operations department. We're basically talking about Nick Kroll, general manager Nick Kroll, and his team. I have kind of defended him, and Bill Lack and Chris Garber smacked me around a little bit for that last week, which I get, I understand. But it's basically because I've met Nick Kroll and I know that he's not an idiot. I know that he understands advanced analytic concepts. I know that he's not a moron. But we also know that Bob Castellani will not provide the funds to really, truly improve the team. The flip side is I can't say that Nick Kroll's a good general manager. I don't have any evidence that shows that. I think he's, you know, getting too much slack for this, but maybe not. Maybe these moves could have been done 2 months ago. I think we just have imperfect information there. And it's quite possible, Nathan, that Baseball Ops does deserve some of the blame for this bullpen, even though our buddy John Fay says that Nick Kroll should get all the credit for the good bullpen relievers, that whoever they are, during that 2 week stretch. So anyway, this is a head start on winter business, says Nathan. Nathan Connor, not Nathan Dotson. Do you have any thoughts about that question and those thoughts?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. We aren't privy enough to the information, you know, behind the scenes. We can be sure that the front office has, at least ownership, has done very little to improve the quality of this ball club. I think that everyone else, they have a job to do. They're trying to don't want to do the best at their job. They're trying to keep their job.
Yeah.
So at some point, these questions are kind of in conflict with each other. Should they bear the blame? And also, they're preparing for next year. I'm not sure that I have faith that the team has prepared for future seasons.
Yeah.
In a long time.
That's a great point.
I just don't know. I choose to believe that everyone that's getting paid to do a job is trying to do the best job they can do.
Yeah. You know, we talked about having, Luis Senna for another year, 2 years, I think. And there's an argument to be made that might be given, and in terms of inside information, we don't have a ton. We don't know everything that's going on there. I do have information that points to Bob Castellani non-public information, frankly. He's not paying. He's not going to pay. So we do have a little bit of information, but not enough to know whether how much Nick Kroll. You could maybe flip it and say Nick Kroll, by acquiring a guy that's available past this year, is trying to, at a low cost, prepare for future years a little bit. But yeah, I don't think we know whether this front office is good or not. I don't think we know whether they're bad or not either. We don't know enough. Joe Farsing asked this question. I hope these window dressing moves don't give fans a false sense that Bob Castellani is anything but a cheap SOB. Don't worry, Joe. You know we're not going to ever say anything other than that here until he proves otherwise. With that being said, when can we get to work on the billboard? Thank you, Joe. This is something Joe and I have talked about. Some I've mentioned it here on the podcast before, and Joe and I specifically have talked about it on our Slack channel a little bit. I really am at some point, and maybe in the next month, I really think I'm going to do a billboard somewhere in Cincinnati. Just sell the team, Bob, from Red Leg Nation Radio. What do you think about that, Nate? Sell the team, Bob, from Red Leg Nation Radio.
I mean, I'll contribute a few bucks on the GoFundMe, and this has made me think about conspiracy theories are all the rage right now. Do you think there is a chance that Bob Castellani thought he was buying a Cessna when he purchased Luis Sessa? Maybe he thought he was getting a plane. I said, hey, throw in Justin Wilson, I'll buy that plane.
Oh, he has at least one private plane, I know. Maybe. All right, I'll take on the extra expense of this Wilson guy who you're talking about. But you mean I get a plane, too? All right, it's worth it. Oh, that's hilarious.
We need the billboard.
Yeah, we're going to do the billboard. Hold my feet to the fire, fans of Red Leg Nation Radio. Okay, I'm going to read this from Eric Gruen. Kyle Farmer is set to bat third tonight, which got a laugh from me. I understand he got the hot bat, but I've never considered the three hole the spot where you stick in whoever is hitting well. I understand mixing righties and lefties, but it would be less surprising to me if Suarez was put there instead of Farmer. Thoughts? Eric, I'll say this. I completely agree with you, but Kyle Farmer got three hits out of the three hole against the Cubs today. So I'm not disagreeing with you, but tonight might not be the night for us to make that argument, right?
Baseball is a funny game.
It's crazy. Jackson Lotta talks about Jose Barrera getting bumped back up to the bigs this year. Under what circumstance? Quickly, do you think Barrero is going to be play for the Reds this year before September, say?
Before September, that's the qualifier I was hoping you wouldn't ask. Do I think he is? If I was a betting man, if I had to put money one way or the other, I'm going to say no. Should he? Absolutely. I just – maybe you never root for an injury, but maybe something like that could get him brought up. I don't see a scenario where you can argue against him at least getting another taste. But do I think he's going to? I don't know. I don't have enough faith in the front office.
Yeah, a lot of people argue with me on the Twitters that there's an argument against it, which is named Kyle Farmer. Skylar Webker asks this one. With rumors of Red Scouts looking at Mad Max, Max Scherzer, throw today, which, you know, the Reds are not getting Max Scherzer. But anyway, and teams drawing interest in Nick Senzel. There has been some rumors specific about the Florida Marlins being interested. Florida Marlins, they're Miami Marlins now, interested in Nick Senzel. Here's Skylar's question. Would you trade Senzel and see him become an all-star for the next 4 or 5 years for 2 months of a serious impact player and win a title this year? So would you trade Nick Senzel, have him become, stay healthy, and become an all-star for the next 4 or 5 years? Would you trade that for 2 months of a serious impact player and a championship this year? Now, I'm going to answer this, and I want to hear you weigh in because, I don't know, I actually think you may have the same given your history with the Reds. I'm the biggest Nick Senzel fan on earth. I've not hidden it. He's a great kid. He's not been able to stay healthy, and I hate that. I've never advocated trading him because I think he has more value to the organization right now than he would in trade because he's at his asset value is low. But if the question is, would I trade him and him become the guy I think he can be, but the Reds win a championship? The answer to me is yes. I'm going to take that championship. We don't get those things, man. We don't get those championships. So I would hate it, and I would root for Senzel wherever he went. But there is no one on this team that I wouldn't trade for a championship this year. What do you think, Nate?
That last thing you said is true. I immediately started thinking about Votto, and I still agree. There's nobody that is untouchable for a championship, only if you're guaranteed a championship.
Right.
The part of this question that I take issue with is, would you trade him for 2 months of a serious impact player? And as much as I love Nick Senzel, I don't see how you're getting a serious impact player with his injury history and lack of production at the major league level.
Yeah, it's sad. Number 2 overall pick.
So let's keep him. So let's keep him and let him thrive as a Red Leg.
I hope. I just hope he can stay healthy at some point. Yeah. I've tried to be honest about Senzel on this podcast while also, I really like the kid. My first feature piece for the print Cincinnati magazine was about Senzel, and he was so kind with his time. And the University of Tennessee, where Senzel played ball, when they played the University of Virginia in the College World Series this year, had a bet with Senzel's dad over who's going to win, and so Senzel's dad has to host me at a football game this fall is what we came up with, because Virginia won that game. But I don't want him traded, and I think Nate's right. I don't see how you get a serious impact player for him right now. Oh, it's so sad. What could have been? All right, a couple quick questions.
It still could be.
Thank you. Yes, it could be still. I'm not going to count on it. I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for it just because of the injury history. But yes, he's still young enough that it could be. TJ Horston, quickly, I'm going to let you answer this one. How do we change the election voting rules to allow Joey Votto, Canadian citizen, to become president of the United States of America?
This is an amazing question. I don't know how to answer it, but I hope we can figure it out right away. Hey, there have been some unlikely people win the presidency over the years, and I can't imagine they were more qualified than Joseph Daniel Votto.
Well, I know a little bit about the law, and so we're going to have to amend the Constitution. The best we can maybe hope for is just let's start a campaign that he gets to be the Prime Minister of Canada, and and then he'll be a friend to America. Cincinnati's own Joey Votto at this point. All right, last question comes from Dwight Kelly. And the first question, I think, that's not baseball related for that's kind of rare, which is fine. It's good. We've had a lot to talk about with baseball. But Dwight Kelly asks, do either of you know what a hurdy-gurdy is? Hurdy-gurdy. Hint, it's not used in an obscure Olympic competition. Nate, do you know what a hurdy-gurdy is?
You could have convinced me it was a random pitcher in the 30s or 40s, but no, I have no idea.
I had no idea either, and so I looked it up. The hurdy-gurdy is a mechanical string instrument that produces sound by a hand crank turned rosined wheel rubbing against the strings. Dwight,
okay. You could have given me 10 guesses, and I wouldn't have got the hand cranked instrument.
1,000 guesses. Dwight, I love you, buddy, but that's a weird question. All right, Nate, that's enough for tonight. We've gone longer than I wanted to go, and I appreciate you being on here. Do you have any final thoughts for the audience here of Red Leg Nation Radio?
Nothing really. I mean, some really great content today. We have a lot to be excited for as Reds fans, so let's not let the there are plenty of reasons the front office has given us to be pessimistic. We have reason for optimism right now. That's what Reds fanhood is all about. So let's lean into it. Go Reds.
That's precisely why I wanted to talk to you again on here. I think it's really important that we not forget that, yeah, you know what? This is a fun team. They're flawed. They're completely flawed. But they're fun, and they're above 500, and that's rare. And we do need to remember every week, you get frustrated with Bob Castle if you want. I've been more frustrated than anybody, but you know what? They're still a fun team, and let's enjoy it while we've got it, because we've had 90 lost seasons, and this is not that team. So anyway, this is a Red Leg Nation Radio episode number 386. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Go subscribe to us. That helps us. If you get us on one of the services such as Apple Podcasts, that you can leave a review. That would be extremely helpful if you leave us a 5-star review. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/redlegradio where you can support the podcast if you wish. Nate, always great talking to you, but especially it's great talking to you about these old Cincinnati Reds. Thank you, man.
So much fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Red Leg Nation Radio for Nate Dotson and Joseph Daniel Votto, the GOAT. This is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.